You're listening to an MKFM news special.
MKFM.
Monday evening then, across Milton Keynes, delighted to say that we're joined by Matthew Barr with the Police and Crime Commissioner for Thames Valley Police. Hello, Matthew.
Good evening. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, pleasure to see you. How are things with you?
Well, very busy at the moment. There's obviously some real pressures around policing in Milton Keynes, which is taking up a lot of time and a lot of effort from a lot of people. But we've got some plans and we'll hopefully manage to get on top of things and reassure people.
So if people don't know what a police and crime commissioner does, maybe tell us a little bit more about your role.
Yeah, sure. My job is a relatively new one, so people will be forgiven for not properly understanding it. My role is as an elected person who will hopefully have support from across people from Thames Valley, is to hold the force to account, to scrutinise the force and to set the strategic priorities and the budget for policing. I'm by law not allowed to get involved in individual operational circumstances, which is for all appropriate. But what I can do is drive that focus and hold the force to account through the Chief Constable for delivering for people locally.
So literally you sit somewhere between the public and Thames Valley Police itself?
Exactly. I am the representative of the public in
right.
terms of policing.
Okay, excellent. So there's been a lot going on, as you said, in Milton Keynes. Is Milton Keynes one of your biggest areas of concern at the moment?
Well, Milton Keynes is just one of our biggest areas, quite frankly. You know, the largest conurbation in the whole of Thames Valley, hugely significant. And you know, as I know from the more I get to meet people who live here, a fantastic place to live. But there are some significant challenges around crime, yet most notably, of course, the concern over knife crime, given some of the incidents that we've seen recently. And what the really strange thing, particularly around knife crime, is that actually we've seen a downward trend over the last two or three years, and we've seen further reductions in the last 12 months. But that doesn't necessarily play out when you see some of the horrific incidents that we have seen. Those individual incidents perhaps hide those general reductions.
Yeah, when we had Mark in, the superintendent of Thames Valley Police, a few months ago, he said exactly the same thing. And I know that when we actually wrote that up and people listened to the interview, people just didn't believe that. But you're repeating that again today.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, it does seem it can seem hard to believe, but yeah, these are the numbers of reported crimes, knife crimes that happen in and around Milton Keynes have gone down over the last 12 months, and they've continued to go down over the last 3 years. But yeah, the tragic thing about knife crime, why it's so important and isn't just a matter for policing, is that the difference between a serious assault and a murder, of which we've sadly seen far too many, could be a matter of a couple of inches or how quick the emergency response is. And so any incident with anybody carrying a knife we know is potentially fatal, and that's what we need to try and tackle.
Why does it seem that there is actually more of this? Because, you know, I've been involved in MKFM for, getting on for 10 years now, really consider myself as having a close eye on everything that's going on. But even sitting here today, I find it hard to believe that the figures are actually lower than 3 years ago.
I think it can be a real challenge. I think some of it is how we see things conveyed on social media. We talk about it an awful lot more. I think one of the things which has happened across the country, and certainly sadly happened here, which I think adds to the shock factor, is that we sadly see much younger people becoming involved in knife crime. And I think that makes it more of a headline. I think we sit up and notice it a lot more when that is the case. And when things happen close at hand, in our own town, in our own neighbourhoods, understandably, that sticks with people. So when I say numbers have come down, I'm in no way complacent about that. But it would be wrong for me to come on here and give people a wrong impression. We are gradually starting to get things going in the right direction. So those numbers really matter. But anybody carrying a knife and using it to perpetrate crime is one too many. And we've seen some of those sad incidents on the streets of Milton Keynes.
And what do you think is the main reason why a lot more youngsters are getting involved in knife crime? Do you think, and again, I don't want to get too political, but, you know, over the last 10 years or so, there's been various cuts in there. We've had austerity. There hasn't been the youth clubs and all that. The councils have had to make cutbacks.
I think there's a whole mix of things. And I think there's definitely a bit of a culture around the knife carrying. I mean, people often cite the areas such as youth work, and it's one of the areas that actually, my office, we invest quite heavily in community groups and diversionary work through the Violence Reduction Unit. And I think that all plays a part, but I think it's also a bit too easy to say, there's not enough youth provision, so people carry knives. There are lots of benefits to having a strong youth provision in a community, whether that's provided by the voluntary sector or local councils. But the absence of that doesn't automatically mean that people need to carry knives. What we are seeing, though, is that wider culture where perhaps it starts off in schools, whether it's perceive status or perhaps fear of others who they think might be carrying knives. But we certainly see that reported, that growing rise of people willing to carry knives at a relatively early age. And I think the response to that has to go well beyond policing.
One of the things that's been denied in the past, Matthew, is that there is a gang culture in Milton Keynes. I know that when we had the superintendent in a few months ago, it was something that he denied. What do you think about gangs in Milton Keynes? Do you think that's something that we're experiencing?
So I think the way policing looks at these, tries to identify gangs and score them around risk. And it is quite remarkable, because I've asked some of the same questions for a town the size of Milton Keynes, very nearly a city, we all hope very soon. And some of those issues that we talked about around serious violence actually scores relatively low on the number of recognised gangs. But it absolutely plays into that culture that I've been talking about. And almost whether it's a recognised gang or not doesn't matter. I think that the fact is that we are seeing amongst teenagers, young men often in their early 20s, criminal behaviour, which, whether it's organised as part of a gang or not, absolutely poses a threat. And that's where we need to focus the policing work that goes on in Milton Keynes to try and tackle it.
And what about the link between knife crime and drugs? There's been a number of raids over the last few days. Do you think some of this is down to teenagers not feeling safe unless they're carrying a knife, and the drug side of it is something completely different?
No, I think it's absolutely all linked. Right. Some young people will claim that they are carrying a knife because they feel unsafe, but that in itself is only a knock-on effect of others carrying knives as part of the drug trade. And we know that one of the real risks around county lines exploitation is how young people are exploited and manipulated into carrying drugs. It's a really worrying and challenging area for everyone, but absolutely in the vast majority of cases where you see violent crime.
And from where you sit then, because as we said when we started the interview, you sit somewhere between the public and the police. Do you think there's enough being done between the police and the schools and the parents? Do you think the communication is there, or do you think there's a bit of a disconnect still?
I think there's always more that we can do. I think there's we probably need to involve parents a lot more in the conversation. So the link between schools and police and local authorities, and indeed the NHS, is actually pretty good and has been developing over the last couple of years. The violence reduction unit that people might have heard me talk about before is really a partnership between all of those agencies led by the police, but it's not just about policing. I think that works really well, but ultimately there's a big role for parents in this to understand what their children are doing, where their children are, who they're associating with. I've got young children. I think anybody with children will want to know what the children are up to. And sadly, we see some of the exploitation that children will experience through county lines, gangs, etc. There are telltale signs that parents might be the first ones to spot, and there is help out there through schools with the police to try and tackle all those things at an early stage.
And I guess asking the kids, your kids, if you're responsible for them, if they are carrying a knife, because I was saying to Mark when he came on, I've got a couple of teenagers who are a little bit older now, but you kind of think to yourself, well, okay, before they go out, you need to tell them to be careful. And for months and months and months, I actually thought, well, I've never asked them if they've carried a knife or if they carry one.
It seems like perhaps an odd conversation to have, a difficult conversation potentially. But ask your children, ask if they know someone that they're associated with who does, or they think that does. There are operations in place with the police where we'll work with schools and parents to try and get to children early. I would much rather find a 14, 15-year-old lad who carries a knife and the parents have told us, the teacher has told us, and we can intervene early, try and work out why that individual is carrying a knife, stop them doing it. I'd much rather intervene then than wait until they're stopped and searched by the police when potentially it's a bit too late and they're already moving towards the criminal justice system or ultimately after an offence has been committed and perhaps someone's been hurt.
As regards as the police in Milton Keynes, we've seen a number of messages through our social media over the last week or so, especially what happened over last weekend. I think it was three major crimes in 4 days. People saying that police have lost control in Milton Keynes. I know that you're not going to feel that that's the case.
No, I wouldn't feel that that's the case, but I understand the frustration that the public have.
Yeah.
And yeah, there is a real challenge out there around around dealing with crime. But there is that wider partnership work that I think we need to do. Not all of the answers to these problems will lie with policing, but the police are core to that response, which is why we're recruiting more police officers. We're looking to increase the number of police officers on the street and have that really robust approach. But certainly when it comes to knife crime, the work I'm doing with the police at the moment is to make sure we're using all of those powers in the criminal justice system to full effect. So we're not just not just stopping children on the street. We're actually looking at, well, what can we do beyond that once someone's been stopped to prevent them reoffending in the future.
You're listening to an MKFM news special.
MKFM.
Monday night across Milton Keynes, and we're talking to Matthew Barber, the Police and Crime Commissioner for Thames Valley Police. Looking back to between Christmas and New Year when we had the anti-vax protest here in Milton Keynes. You had what happened at the testing centre, the road. You had what happened at Milton Keynes Theatre. If they'd happened on separate days, you'd be saying that they're two massive instances in themselves. How could that happen on the same day? Because I've looked at the footage and photographs and that, and there just doesn't seem to be any police around.
Oh, well, I've asked the Chief Constable some pretty searching questions around that as well. I think there's a lot that's not captured on the footage.
But you would think that one incident like that would stop the other one from happening, because the testing centre having the problems that it experienced on that day, you know, we've heard from a number of people that were at Milton Keynes Theatre that night, both major instances in themselves, and you just think, well, after the first one, why wasn't there enough police to prevent the second one? And it's like when you look at this weekend in Tattenhoe, you've got catalytic converters being stolen, you've got vehicles being stolen. The police press release today says that, you know, this is a spate of crimes that have happened in one estate here in Milton Keynes. So after the first or second one, why isn't there enough resources to prevent the rest from happening? And it kind of relates to that anti-vaxxer protest as well. It seems that the police are kind of not preventing crime, not stopping it from happening, but just responding after it's happened.
Well, that is a major part of my push with the force, and actually the subject of some of the meetings I've had earlier today, looking at moving policing away from simply responding to incidents and getting into that prevention work. And that will take a bit of time to make that shift, but that is really about boosting the work of our neighbourhood teams, who are the officers who will be able to do the proactive patrols, hold some of those investigations, know who the difficult individuals are in their community, really bear down on those, rather than moving away from just responding to things. Now, there are real pressures on policing at the moment, not just locally in Thames Valley, but nationally. And those officers who will be on shift today do a fantastic job of trying to cover all that work. But there will be, I think, that bit of time as we're bringing those new officers through recruitment, where we are making that shift, because that's absolutely where we need to be, is around prevention. And a lot of the stuff around knife crime is exactly that. It's about identifying the individuals who we think are at risk of carrying weapons, or perhaps known to have carried weapons in the past, and really bear down on those so that we're preventing incidents happening in the future.
So when we had the superintendent of Milton Keynes in a few months ago, some of the questions that were asked, and we've got the same questions for you today, is why don't we see more police out and about, more bobbies on the beat? And Mark kind of gave us the impression that work is being done probably more on intelligence, which seems, you know, to point at more people sitting around computers. The evidence is kind of showing me what's happening in Milton Keynes is that crimes aren't being prevented. And so from what you're saying is that you think that there does need to be a shift.
I think I wouldn't suggest that nothing's been done so far. I think it needs to be a shift change, if you like, a change of gear in how we're doing that. Now, a lot of that intelligence-led work, that's not just about people sitting around behind computers. I've been with some of our roads policing colleagues last week who are based across the whole of Thames Valley, so they're not just in Milton Keynes, but they will be able to come in and surge resources when need be. So some of the intelligence-led work is they're being tasked with particular locations, particular individuals to spot that will be in Milton Keynes and other hotspot areas around Thames Valley. So they are able to do some of that foot patrol. Although they're roads policing officers, they will turn up, they'll park the vehicle, they'll get out, they'll do a foot patrol in certain areas, and that is very targeted at some of those local areas where we know there are particular problems. That's about the intelligence-led approach. It would be great to have, you know, a police officer on every corner, but frankly, if we took the whole of the 20,000 uplift that's coming across the country, we wouldn't have enough police resources to do that across the whole of Thames Valley. So we do need to be intelligence led, but actually you're right, getting police officers to do that is good old fashioned prevention patrolling really does work, but that is absolutely the direction we're going in.
Yeah, because I guess when it comes down to teenagers and people that are lurking around on the streets, I guess there is a huge benefit of the police getting to know them.
Exactly, and that's why a lot of that work actually happens within schools. So we've got schools officers now who'll be working with teachers and with the children in schools in Milton Keynes and other areas of the Thames Valley to try and identify some of those individuals, because these will be individuals who are often known to their school, to the police, yeah, to the council in some form or other.
Okay, and I know that we've got a lot to talk about here, but just to go back on that anti-vax protest, I don't think we quite established the reasons why two major incidents could have happened in the same day. You said that you followed that up. So looking back on that particular day, what could have been done differently?
Yeah, so I think there were some issues there around intelligence gathering within the Force, about really what to expect and making sure the resources were in the right place. As a result of that, the Force reviewed all of the intelligence and security processes around all of the vaccination sites across Thames Valley and put new arrangements in place to transport notes. Now, policing generally doesn't have a massive reserve of officers just sort of sitting there waiting for a big incident to happen to surge those resources. You know, we move people around Thames Valley as is necessary, but they're not just sort of sitting in a load of vans waiting to go, because if they were, people would rightly say, well, why aren't they doing something more proactive? So it does depend on having the intelligence to make sure that those officers are in place, if you like, on standby to deal with those. And so as a result of that incident that we saw a few months back, all of those processes were reviewed, and there's new processes in place around, for example, vaccination sites.
All right, brilliant. Well, we're going to get into more of your questions next. It's MKFM.
You're listening to an MKFM news special.
MKFM.
So MKFM on a MKFM news special, got Matthew Barber with us this evening. So let's talk about police numbers then, Matthew. There's been a lot of tweets and stuff going around over the last few weeks of what the police numbers are in Milton Keynes. I remember we asked our MPs as well, and even they were unsure of the actual numbers here in Milton Keynes. Obviously, there was a Labour press release where it said only an additional two officers have been recruited. Charlotte from our news team tried to find out from Thames Valley Police directly. They pointed her to a freedom of information request. One of our listeners did actually manage to get the numbers on a FOI, and his numbers seem to differ quite considerably to what you'd put out.
Well, I can reassure everybody the numbers certainly aren't two, which some were suggesting within the area. It's a really complex area of this, and it sounds really simple. How many police officers have you got? And the FOI will tell people how many police officers are in Milton Keynes that just are allocated to the local police area. But what that doesn't tell you is around some of those other resources that are there to support Milton Keynes, often based in Milton Keynes. So roads policing officers that will patrol and manage the streets and the road network in Milton Keynes won't be shown on that FOI, for example. Some of our specialist teams, the force detectives who will deal with the major incidents that we've had, that some of those are based at Milton Keynes, and they won't be shown in the figures in the FOI request. So the figures supplied to me by the recruitment team, which show that from the start of September 2019, which was when the National Uplift Programme came into place, to the end of January this year, if you look at those people, all the movements in and out, the people who joined, retired, transferred, they're telling me that there are 78 more police officers in around Milton Keynes than we had at the start of that process. So that's a really significant change. Now, is it enough? We continue to recruit, and there's another round of recruitment opened up this week. And I would urge anybody listening who's interested in a career in policing within Milton Keynes to get in touch with the force, because there is an active drive to recruit people. We've got 367 new police officers across the whole of Thames Valley since the process started, and we will get to nearly 600 as part of the Home Office funded recruitment, and I'm putting in local funding to continue to recruit beyond that. But we can only do that if we can get the people coming forward and getting through our training program.
And I don't know if you'd be able to answer this fully, but how are those officers being recruited? Because certainly us sitting here on MKFM, no one's approached us to ask us to advertise those positions. We work with the MK Job Show. Thames Valley Police didn't take part in January with that. There's a local jobs newspaper. I think you've got the Met Police in there recruiting, but there's nothing from Thames Valley Police. So how is that being done?
So there's a whole range of recruitments, and sadly we do get the Met coming in and trying to steal a few officers, and we want to get as many as we can locally. So a lot of it is done online, targeted through social media, but also the force will go out and recruit at events. I was on Fishermead a couple of weeks ago at a church hall. Talking to those who are interested, literally just a sort of drop-in session, and talking to some of those potential new recruits there. So a whole range of ways in which people can get in touch and join up.
All right, excellent. Let's go back then to some of the recent events here in Milton Keynes then. A lot of people are saying, why can't the Section 60 remain in place until there's a huge reduction in crime in Milton Keynes?
So Section 60s are they're defined by law, that they have to be time limited and defined to a geographical area. So although that's an operational point, which is where my powers end as PCC, the force wouldn't be able to just have a blanket Section 60 that just sort of continued for months on end. But what does continue, of course, is the normal stop and search powers. Section 60 is useful in a particular defined area because the police don't need the normal grounds to stop and search. But of course, stop and search with reasonable grounds to do so exists for officers all of the time, and they will continue to do that. We see weapons and drugs being taken off our streets by officers in Milton Keynes and across Thames Valley at all times, whether they're Section 60 or not. So that shouldn't limit the police's ability to do that. But of course, stop and search itself is only a tool, and we need to have the officers in the right place at the right time in order to be able to use it.
So do you think Section 60 is that effective?
I think it's a useful part of the armory, but none of these issues are like a panacea which are going to solve all of our problems. Frankly, we are working in a very complex world. Policing, unlike virtually any area of if you like the public sector, is working against people who are by definition deliberately working against you. And you've got people who will seek to avoid detection. That's what the police have got to work against. All of these powers need to be used appropriately. Section 60 is just part of that.
And on you'll be aware of this incident, but on the 30th of March, there was a number of people chased by two kids, age of 13, with a Viking axe. This is one on one of the estates, and this is why there was a Section 60 in place. You can probably understand why residents have got major concerns over what's going on at the minute.
Yeah, of course I can understand the concern. And I spoke to the superintendent soon after that. That incident and the and when the individual was in custody, I think understandably that sort of incident causes huge concern, and it's exactly that culture that we need to tackle. In that case, my understanding is those responsible are in custody and will be progressing through the criminal justice system, and quite rightly so. But we need to get to a position of preventing that from happening in the first place.
And what about low-level crime? Because that's something that doesn't seem to be tackled. I know a number of people and people that have contacted us through the radio station where there has been a low-level crime. They've literally reported it on 101 or online, and they've got a crime reference number, and that seems to be about it.
So I hate the word low-level crime because it suggests it doesn't matter. And people may feel that's how their case can be treated. And that shouldn't be the case, because if you've been, if you've had your bicycle stolen, you might accept that it's not as serious as a knife attack on someone, but it's still pretty serious to you because you need your bike back. If your van has been broken into and your tools stolen, you need those tools to earn a living. That's a pretty significant incident to you. Same with catalytic converters when they're stolen. So I would say they are taken seriously. All of those reports will go in, will be reviewed locally, and will form part of an intelligence picture across the force. And they are investigated. Often the investigation may well take several individual incidents, because yeah, those responsible may well be responsible for more than one. But where I think we need to be about that whole prevention point is to take some of that workload away from the frontline response officers, who are dealing with the perhaps slightly faster moving, really critical incidents that we've already talked about, and have a more dedicated team who can carry that workload, so that people don't feel that their low level crimes, inverted commas, are being lost in the priority issues. But actually, we have a dedicated sort of crime assessment and investigation team that will be able to carry that workload and deliver much better results for the public.
But at the moment, the days of an officer actually coming out to someone's house and actually investigating it, taking it more details, that does actually seem to be over.
Well, it depends what the nature of the crime is, of course, yeah. And how appropriate it is for someone to come out. I'm all for that human contact when it's necessary and appropriate. But actually, if all the details can be taken over the phone, if the report can be made online, and that actually frees up the officer to get on with the investigation rather than simply visiting, then that's where we should be. But the public need to be reassured, and this is what I work on with the force, they need to be reassured that investigation will actually continue and take place. What they don't want to do, understandably, is just to be given that crime reference number and then never hear anything back and assume that nothing's happening.
What about if someone's assaulted them? Because that's not low level. I know of someone that was assaulted and the police never followed up. They got the crime number and it was them that actually chased the police for a statement, and again it was only done over the phone as far as they're aware. Nothing has happened about that, and that does seem to be the general theme through a number of the questions that have been submitted.
Well I question general theme,
yeah.
Given the volumes of crime that are reported across the whole of Thames Valley, we've actually seen the outcome rates for crime improve over the last couple of years, and the force has gone from sort of being in the bottom quarter of forces across the country to get in the top 10. But I can't comment on individual cases.
No,
really happy to ask some questions about those, because I would agree. If you've been a victim of assault, that's not a low level crime. You should expect to have the follow up that the public would deserve.
All right. What additional powers can be given to officers to help protect residents here in Milton Keynes? We've got the Section 60, but what else can be done to kind of reduce what's going on at the moment?
So one of the areas that Thames Valley is going to be piloting soon is around knife crime prevention orders. So these are orders that can be given to people who've been caught several times and gone through the criminal justice carrying a weapon. That would give the police the power to stop and search that individual without suspicion. We just know you've had an order imposed by the court. We can now just stop you at any time to check. I think again that's a useful tool, but I'm really much more interested in how we get people through the court process and ensure there are some really severe penalties for this at the moment. So whether that needs new powers or simply a proper use of the powers that already exist, I think there's a real challenge, and this will probably be familiar to many of your listeners, around getting the CPS, the Crown Prosecution Service, to prosecute in a lot of these cases. And I'm pushing the force to effectively push the boundary a bit on which cases the police could charge without getting the CPS on board if they won't support. But that's where the ongoing dialogue is between police and CPS, because it's all very well the police scooping people up off the streets using stop and search, but if actually when they get to custody it's months before they end up in court, or there's a caution which has a little impact on someone's behaviour, then the public will understandably lose confidence in the system. So I think we need to not only scoop those individuals up and make sure the police are out there to nick them, but actually make sure that there are some real consequences, for example, to carrying knives on the streets of Milton Keynes.
And as regards as prevention, what about more CCTV and the quality of CCTV? Because again, as soon as I've said that, you're probably thinking of some of those images where it looks as if it was taken in the 80s, let alone 2022.
I mean, I've often seen some CCTV put where someone says, well, I've got this on camera and nobody will do anything. I think two black figures in the darkness with hoods.
Yeah,
I can't see anything. So there is some real issues there about the quality, about the technology. But as far as the public space is concerned, I completely agree. I think again, it's not going to solve all of our problems, but CCTV is really important because it can reassure the public, it can deter crime because the people will know that it's there, and it can also aid investigations. I mean, often these things can work almost live, where a police officer will be out and they can ask a controller for directions of where someone's gone. There's a real challenge in Milton Keynes. discussions with the council funding for CCTV, where we've got a significant number of the cameras in Milton Keynes that aren't functioning and aren't being supported by the council. I'm really keen for policing to step up and fill that gap, and it's a conversation I've already had with some of the council officers, and I'm trying to pull together a plan for a wider Thames Valley partnership. I put £1 million aside in the budget for the coming year, which will be looked to kickstart that work. CCTV is an expensive business, and we need to look. You know, I need to look at the whole of Thames Valley, but you know, I need to work with local authorities on that. At the moment, there are some big gaps in places, but if we can pull it all together, link it with existing police systems, we can produce something that really can have an impact on preventing crime, making the public feel safe, and delivering evidence to court when we need it.
Right. Obviously, in the interest of local elections, we're in Purdah at the moment. Labour would no doubt respond by saying because of Conservative cuts, they haven't got the money to put into CCTV.
Well, I believe they had some money in the budget in 2019 that wasn't spent. But I don't want to get into the details of that. The simple fact is we got CCTV in Milton Keynes. My view is the public deserve it to be working. And so I'm looking at using some of the funding that I've got through my community safety fund and policing budgets to say, well, we might need to step in to subsidise that because it's not being funded properly by the council.
Okay, so to kind of wrap up then, there'd be people that are listening to the interview this evening and just thinking, well, okay, fair enough, Matthew stands between us and the police, but a lot of the stuff that he said tonight just seems to be baloney because we don't believe that there is more police on the street. We don't believe that low-level crime is being followed up and there's a reduction on it. There's a number of things that you've said tonight that paints that there is a number of improvements, but residents here in Milton Keynes just won't be feeling that that's the case.
Well, I think how people feel really matters. It matters to me as an elected politician, but you know, it matters to me and my community, so I absolutely get that. There are some empirical facts about, you know, increasing the number of police officers, and you know, I obviously see them a bit more than everybody else because I work in that world of policing now. But I've been out on shifts in Milton Keynes with neighbourhood officers and with response officers, some of those very new in service, and seeing those increases starting to come through. Yet realistically, it does take time. You know, once you recruit someone, you've got to train them. It takes them a while to get out there on the streets, but those numbers are absolutely going in the right directions. Similarly, the overall numbers around knife crime and serious violence are heading in the right direction. I accept that people's experience is what they see, what they see on, you know, local Facebook groups, what their friends talk about, but the numbers are there, and so I can't deny the reality of those numbers. But perception is everything, and that is all of our reality. We will only make people feel safer in Milton Keynes when we really manage to tackle the blight of knife crime, which doesn't just affect Milton Keynes. There are some real challenges across the whole of Thames Valley, across the whole of the country, and that's why I stress that there's a massive role for policing, and it's the one thing that is really driving me at the moment to make sure we can get the right approach from policing, that we put the resources in the right place, that we use all of those powers that the police have to drive down on knife crime. But we also need to work with schools, with councils, with parents, to stop people carrying knives in the first place.
All right, brilliant. Well, I really appreciate you coming in. If people want to get in contact with you, how can they do that?
They can find details of my office on our website. That's thamesvalley-pcc.gov.uk, or get in touch with us on social media.
All right, brilliant. Thanks again.
You're listening to an MKFM news special.
MKFM.